When it comes to identity theft protection, ordering a free credit report is like going to the movies just for the previews. But with Identity Guard, you get a veritable double feature of 21st century tools and technologies. So get Identity Guard, sit down, have a large popcorn, and get real identity theft protection and a very happy ending.
Don't be a victim of online identity theft. Get Identity Guard. Serious 21st century stuff for 21st century crime. Call 877-600-2669 today or visit identityguard.com.
You know, brand new cars come with big new payments. And right now, with the economy having a bad hair day, you want to keep the car you got running stronger for longer. Advance Auto Parts. They make it easy to keep your ride running right with offers like 5 quarts of Pennzoil or Quaker State conventional motor oil and a Purolator Premium Plus oil filter for $14.99. Get the oil and filter, and they'll sweeten the deal with $2 off any air or cabin air filter. Whatever you're working on, Advance Auto Parts will help you keep the wheels turning.
What a gorgeous start to a work week with temperatures in the low 70s, and we will continue to warm things the rest of the week, mid-70s by Wednesday and Thursday, upper 70s into your weekend, and we should be 80 by Sunday. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 64 degrees.
Free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, where you can find a list of past guests, download those interviews, see who's scheduled for upcoming shows, and if you're listening live, you can see the call-in numbers. We're joined this evening, March 9, 2009, by Steve McNeek of Growth Energy, America's ethanol producers. Ethanol has gotten a bad rap over the years as competing with food and taking more energy to grow and distill than is obtained from the fuel. Growth Energy seeks to dispel some of these misconceptions. Steve McNeek is McNeek. You'll have to correct me on this. Okay. He's the CEO of Western Plains Energy, LLC, where he oversees a very successful and innovative ethanol company in northwest Kansas. Mr. McNeek has over 20 years of manufacturing and management experience in fields ranging from home products, automotive, defense supplier, and most recently, ethanol. Mr. McNeek is active officer of the board of directors and recently formed Growth Energy Organization. He holds degrees in chemistry and physics, as well as an MBA from Southwestern College in Winfield, Kansas. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
You're welcome. Now, how do you pronounce your last name?
McNinch.
Okay. Well, that was somewhat close.
Like I said, I've heard worse.
Well, you guys are just involved in some conferences today in Denver, is that right?
Actually, had several radio calls to make today. I also just got off the phone earlier this afternoon with the Commissioner of Agriculture in the state of Colorado.
Okay. Well, good. Now, I have to count myself as being among those who have been skeptical about ethanol and have been kind of poo-pooing ethanol as a viable energy alternative for the country. The most recent, last summer, as food prices were going way up, and you know, I guess it was a year ago fall, ethanol was really getting a bad rap as kind of being blamed for the rise in prices because of the good corn when that was being used for fuel rather than for food.
Well, Sterling, hopefully tonight I can help change your mind and let you in on some of the facts around the issues.
Well, go for it. Let's hear your the other side of the story. That's why we have you on tonight.
Well, starting off with the food versus fuel debate, I mean, you touched on it right away. Last fall we did start getting a huge rap for we were using all the country's corn. I will say the plant that I manage, currently today, we will use very, very little, if any, corn. We use grain sorghum. But even more importantly, we actually make more ethanol today than we made a year ago. And if you look at the grain prices today, they're considerably lower than they were a year ago, as is the case with all commodities right now.
Now, is there a correspondence between the lower price of fuel, and how does that tie into that?
Fuel is probably the largest contributor to why you saw grain prices in general, that along with speculation in the marketplace. On average, the food that we all eat travels 1,500 miles to get to your dinner plate. With that, when you saw diesel fuel go up to $4 and $5 a gallon, that cost was getting passed on to all of us.
So I had heard the number 3,000 miles was the average trip for food. You're saying it's about 1,500 miles?
The 1,500 miles, I believe, is the average. For those of us like you in Arizona and me in northwest Kansas, it might be 3,000 miles to get to us.
I'm actually in Utah. I'm phoning in as well. By the way, hi to all you down there in Phoenix. We had snow here in Utah today. Just making you glad you're down there in Phoenix, I guess.
Yeah, we're having freezing drizzle here tonight in northwest Kansas, so I feel your pain.
I drove through Kansas last week. We were coming back from Atlanta doing a cross-country trip, riding in a clean fuel vehicle that runs on hydrogen, natural gas, and ethanol, which is an alcohol. And I was amazed at how many filling stations there are across the country. There's actually a website you can go to that lists, basically like a Google map, where you enter in where you're at, and it'll show you, it's a Google map feature, and it shows all the filling stations, whether you have ethanol or hydrogen or natural gas, whatever it is you're filling up with. There are ethanol stations all over the country. You basically go from any two spots you want and use it. They'll never fill up with any gasoline. That's the vehicle we were driving in. It is a gasoline vehicle that was converted. It's a Suburban that was converted to run on ethanol and natural gas and hydrogen, just with a switch of a button between the two tanks, one tank for the liquid fuels and one tank for the gaseous fuels.
Very good.
So, yeah.
We need more people like you driving around and using up some ethanol.
That's one thing that's really good about that flex fuel vehicle, is that you can burn multiple fuels, so you're not limited by any one type of fuel. For example, the natural gas people, it's really difficult because right now the EPA requires that a natural gas vehicle be a dedicated fuel vehicle. You can't even get certification unless it's a dedicated fuel. So you're basically limited to the natural gas infrastructure. If there's not a filling station, tough luck, you can't go there. You basically can only travel to where you can fill up with natural gas. But if you have a flex fuel vehicle, then you can go anywhere that any of the fuels exist. And since gasoline is one of the fuels you can burn, you can go anywhere. And so it's a really great concept. I'm just putting in a plug for my associate, Ty Robinson, over at AmericanFuelVehicles.com. Sorry for taking a bit of time there. I wanted to give you a bit of a context that, you know, I'm becoming a bit of a believer in this thing. One of the things that's quite amazing as we are traveling cross-country is the knowledge that you can actually blend. You can take a regular vehicle and you can actually mix ethanol and ethanol and gasoline basically to any proportion. Is that your understanding?
That's absolutely correct. When we saw gas prices in my area last summer hitting $4 a gallon, there are conversion kits out on the market today, and the guys that sell them out here were running out. And with the few E85 stations around here, it was amazing. You know, the big joke at work there at the plant was we were just recycling ethanol. We'd make it all day and put it in our cars to go home with.
Now, my understanding, too, is when something I saw on your site, the Growth Energy site, is that most of the ethanol or alcohol that is made for fuel does not come from corn that is designated or designed for consumption, but it comes from the byproducts of the corn growing process, the husks and whatnot.
I don't believe that is correct. What we will see happen is you will see more and more ethanol produced from the cob, from the plant, from the stover, from wheat straw. Currently, most of the grain that is used is corn, but it is feed corn. And feed corn is not meant for human consumption. It's meant for animal or livestock feed and other uses such as that. One of the misconceptions, I was on an airplane flight from Orlando back to Denver about a year ago and had quite a long conversation with the stewardess who was asking me about ethanol. And a lot of people don't understand that over 98% of the corn grown in this country is not sweet corn. It's not the corn that you're going to go to the grocery store and buy. If you've ever, there's a very limited area where you can eat field corn and it tastes okay, but after that, it's not good for people to eat.
Now, my understanding, too, is that in the process of converting the corn, for example, the non-human consumption corn into fuel, that there's a byproduct that can still be fed to the animals.
Absolutely. Over a quarter of the revenue from the plant actually comes, it's called distiller's grain. When you get up into the far heart of the Corn Belt, a lot of it is dried. In my area of the country, I mean, everybody's heard of the Wheat Belt or the Corn Belt. I'm actually in the Beef Belt, so we're surrounded by all kinds of beef cattle. We sell our distiller's grain wet. The interesting thing that we're finding as we make this progression towards ethanol is a cow is really an ethanol plant on legs. The same things that we find useful and innovative in converting grains and starches, and eventually cellulose into ethanol, the cow's been doing for hundreds of years. So all the advancements that we continue to make in the ethanol field are having the exact same benefits in the livestock industry. And over a third of the grain that we consume leaves the plant in that form. The only part of the corn, or in my case the milo, that we're after is the starch. Everything else goes through the plant and makes its way to the feedlot.
Now, one thing that was somewhat surprising, and I may be confusing stories here because we cover a lot of different things on energy, and I may have got this information from another site. I thought it was from yours. Apparently, there are some indications that the bum rap that ethanol has been getting has been conspiratorial in nature, that it's actually been the conniving of the oil industry that doesn't want to be etched out of the industry, but has been putting some of this bad press about ethanol out there, which is essentially misinformation. Would you go along with that?
I believe that is probably the case. There's also been a huge push by the grocery manufacturers of America. And I can't say as I would really blame them. I mean, if you look at the oil industry today, they see ethanol of higher blends as taking over part of the marketplace, which in fact is what federal law passed in 2007 says that we have to do. It's interesting when we hear people talk about energy independence and our security. You know, we send over $400 billion a year overseas to basically our enemies to allow them to fuel our industry, and we provide them with the money to attack us with, and at the same time, we continue to have this artificial blend limit of 10% ethanol that really caps our dependence on foreign oil to 90%. It's really aggravating. A lot of the stuff you see in the press is, like you say, it's either misleading, it's conspiratory, but sometimes it's half-truths that are the way they're spun today make us look really, really bad when, in fact, we're not.
I've got a lot more questions, of course, such as, you know, how much could ethanol, how much of our portfolio could ethanol provide? How does ethanol work in the engine? Whatnot? After we come back from our 15-minute break here, we'll get into some of these questions.
I'd plug the ScanGauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The ScanGauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The ScanGauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at ScanGauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there is powerful information you need to know about the government's bailout of credit card companies. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe with monthly payments you can afford. Credit card companies have been given billions and need to clean their books once and for all. And that's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with payment plans customized for you. It's yours free by calling 1-800-795-0836. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and learn how we have saved our clients millions. Live better, debt free. For free information on how to settle your credit card debt in a government bailout era, call 1-800-795-0836. That's 1-800-795-0836. 1-800-795-0836.
I joined the National Guard for opportunity.
Over 200 career choices and paid training.
Money for college.
A steady paycheck.
Only one thing stood between me and my benefits.
Basic training.
I'm not going to lie, it wasn't easy.
The obstacle course was really challenging.
Now, I'm a National Guard soldier.
I help my community.
I can protect my country.
I'm proud to be on this team.
Because I got stronger.
Because I got to go to college.
The Guard helped me succeed.
Call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask us how you can prepare for basic training.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Free energy, now!
Strong Allen coming back at you. I'm up in Eagle Mountain, Utah. We're talking this evening with Steve McNeech. He is with Growth Energy, America's ethanol producers, here to talk to us about the good size of ethanol and dispel some of the myths that we have heard about ethanol, which apparently some of them have maybe been propagated by the oil industry that doesn't want us to get off of our addiction to oil. I was mentioning before the break that there's a website where you can go and key in an address and find all the different filling stations. The domain name is altfuelprices.com, altfuelprices.com, and I just entered Phoenix, Arizona. And it's showing that there are six different filling stations in the Phoenix area for compressed natural gas. Now, if I click on E85 ethanol, I see that there are five filling stations in the Phoenix area. One's over there in Mesa near Apache Junction, one up there near Cave Creek, and one right in downtown Phoenix. And you can actually click on each one. It shows the price. The one over by Apache Junction is $3.07 a gallon. The one in downtown Phoenix is $1.80 a gallon. Over on 450 South, 15th East Avenue, Phoenix Avenue, gives you a phone number. And you can post comments. You can update the price. Maybe you just went there and say, actually, the price is now $1.45 per gallon. So actually, I don't know about what you're paying down there for gas in Phoenix, but up here in Utah we're paying about $1.90 right now, at least last time I filled up about a week ago. So ethanol is cheaper than gasoline right now on that filling station. You can update the price, post a comment about it. Now, Steve, tell us, can any one of us who drive a gasoline vehicle drive into one of these filling stations and fill up completely with ethanol and be just fine?
It depends on what kind of car you have. If you have a flex fuel vehicle, absolutely. When you get to that high a level of ethanol in the mix, the current legacy vehicles today probably is going to have problems. The biggest problem you're going to have is the O2 sensor. An ethanol molecule contains 35% oxygen all by itself. So what it's going to do, it's going to drive that sensor in your vehicle absolutely nuts. And unlike the cars that that maybe some of us are a little older drove, or our parents drove, the cars today that have computers in them, even if there's nothing wrong with it, if it thinks there are, boy, you're going to have problems driving that car. What our industry is really advocating right now is to incrementally bring those blends up. Currently, like I mentioned before, there's a cap at 10%. We believe absolutely 15% ethanol mixes would run in anybody's car today, maybe even up to 20%. And with a little engineering and a little help, the auto manufacturers tell us that, you know, the biggest problem you have today isn't the fuel, it's the engine that you're running it in. It's built to run off of gasoline, and they've really optimized that. Now, with help with engine compression ratios and such, it is believed ethanol could be a standard fuel and actually run probably better than gasoline runs today.
I know in my friend's vehicle on Ty's Suburban that he converted to run on these different fuels. He did make modifications to the injection system and whatnot so that they would run on these different fuels with no problem. So it's not the same as a regular vehicle. I understand that. And I'm surprised myself I didn't ask him this question when we were driving cross-country. He talked about a lot of different things, but I didn't ask him that question about, you know, could I drive my car up and fill it up with the E85? And you're saying that would be a good idea unless your vehicle is been designed to run on that fuel.
Actually harming the car is probably not going to happen, but there are systems and sensors in there that can make your car think it's sick, and that's really what's going to happen. I've seen a video of two identical vehicles. One was flex fuel and one was non-flex fuel, where they completely dismantled the vehicle and went through, and the only thing they could find different was injectors.
Yeah. Now, when you're, could I, for example, you're saying that 15% is what it really could be. Could I go to a filling station that has the E85 available? And let's say I know I've got about 15 gallons that I can put in there. I can put maybe 12 gallons of gasoline and then 3 of E85, and I'd be okay.
I can't legally tell you that, but I can tell you I've seen people do it and have done it myself without really any issues whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of what it does to the engine, it seems like at one point I heard something to the effect that with the extra alcohol, the OH chain in there, that there are some issues with the engine, some octane and other issues in terms of not just what the computer says is going on, but there's actual performance issues having to do with the fuel itself.
And that's where we get back to, and Ford Motor Company specifically has told us the issue that they have today is, you know, ideally they would like to see the base level move up to 15%, because then it gives it some confidence that we're going to move that way. And they know how to change the engine compression ratio to make sure that that leaner fuel mixture is adequate for your vehicle. You won't have any issues. But the problem we're really running into today is that you have this artificial cap at 10%, and people and technology providers are really leery of spending the money and capital if they don't think this country is serious about moving towards ethanol.
Yeah. Well, I know this last summer when the gas was over $4 a gallon, there was a lot of interest and movement when it came to alternate fuels and fuel economy, and with the price coming back down, that interest has really waned a lot.
That is really, if you look at this country in particular, and you go back to the late 70s when we had the oil embargo, there was the same talk back then. I mean, I wasn't old enough to drive at that time, but I can remember the gas lines and people having to wait because we were running out of gas, and how quickly cheap fossil fuels got us to not care about it anymore. If you look at a country like Brazil today, you know, they started at the same time as we were going through those crises 20 years ago. The only difference is they didn't quit. You saw the ethanol industry at that time, which was very, very young, basically go away until the late 90s or early 2000s. And once again, we started this drive, and the ethanol industry has really exploded over the last 5 or 6 years. It's amazing the rapid changes in technology, the more efficient the plants become. And I strongly believe we can get away from our addiction to oil very, very quickly. We just have to make up our mind that that's what we want to do.
given the amount of farmland that we have or don't have, conceivably, what proportion of our fuel could come from ethanol or some kind of alcohol?
Personally, I strongly believe within 10 or 15 years it could all be that way. The one thing a lot of people don't understand, again, goes back to the food versus fuel debate, where, you know, I'd read story after story last year about we were starving people all over the world. Actually, we were probably feeding people all over the world. A lot of people don't understand the farm policies of this country and Europe basically made farmers around the world unable to farm. We were exporting grains out of this country and out of Europe so cheaply that farmers in third world countries couldn't compete. As a result, today there's over 1 billion acres of farm ground that's been idled. And when you saw grain prices rise, those farmers were actually able to go back to making a living again.
What countries are you aware of are leading the pack when it comes to running their cars on some kind of alcohol?
Absolutely. It would have to be Brazil today. Brazil, to my knowledge, is the only country that doesn't have to import oil from anywhere else. Now, there's a sugarcane base, but the neat thing about ethanol, unlike gasoline or diesel fuel, is an ethanol molecule, no matter where it comes from, is an ethanol molecule. There's only one molecule of its kind in the world. Gasoline is a conglomerate of hydrocarbons, and whether it comes from cellulose, sugar, or corn, ethanol is always ethanol.
What is the best feedstock to make ethanol?
The best feedstock would be whichever one that you can economically use to make your product as cheap as possible to compete.
And that's going to depend on where you're at on the planet.
Absolutely. Like where I'm at in northwest Kansas, the climate wouldn't be good or conducive to growing sugarcane. It's really good at growing corn and milo. And, you know, the interesting thing, again, going back to the food versus fuel, we actually have more corn and feed grains in this country today than we had a year ago. You had the huge weather events in the Midwest. Everybody was scared last summer that we weren't going to have any corn. And lo and behold, we had the second largest crop ever produced.
Huh. What about switchgrass? Does that have to do with ethanol at all, or is that just biomass?
That would be a biomass product. Again, that goes back to the cellulosic ethanol. There's a lot of advancements going on today. You know, the interesting thing about the blend wall today is there's probably 300 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol. Disease are ready to come online today or will be in the next 12 months. But since it is at current rate more expensive to produce than grain alcohol, and there's such a limited pool to go to, it can't come online.
All right. We'll come back after the bottom of the hour.
Live streaming audio on demand, 24 hours a day. Log on now at 1100kfnx.com. kfnx.com.
CNN Radio, I'm Greg Black. Critics say it's unethical, but President Obama's decided to use federal money to help fund embryonic stem cell research. University of Pennsylvania medical ethicist Arthur Kaplan says some other parts of the world have been doing that for years.
Other countries are absolutely pushing as fast as they can in embryonic stem cell research to get ahead of us. China, India, Britain, Sweden, Israel, even Iran. So those countries are hoping that they can come up with some cures before we get there, patent them, sell them back to us.
What to do about Guantanamo? Attorney General Eric Holder has begun meetings with other administration officials trying to figure out what to do with the detainees being held at the military prison there. The Dow and the S&P 500 both lost ground again today. Some analysts say it could be late in the year before the market turns around. A huge merger in the pharmaceutical industry. Merck is buying out rival Schering Plough for $41 billion. This is CNN Radio.
What a gorgeous start to a work week with temperatures in the low 70s, and we will continue to warm things the rest of the week, mid-70s by Wednesday and Thursday, upper 70s into your weekend, and we should be 80 by Sunday. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 64 degrees.
Are you looking to go green?
then don't miss the Southwest Build It Green Expo and Conference, presented by SRP and open to the public on March 13th and 14th at the Phoenix Convention Center. Build It Green features Arizona's largest collection of exhibitors and presenters to educate and provide real solutions for consumers. Homeowners who are environmentally conscious and are looking to save money will find information on eco-friendly appliances, water conservation, solar energy, and more. Plus, News Channel 3's Dave, the garden guy Owens, will be on hand to offer tips on environmentally responsible gardening. Find out everything you need to know to go green at the Southwest Build It Green Expo and Conference, March 13th and 14th at the Phoenix Convention Center. Register for your free conference classes at BuildItGreenExpo.com. That's BuildItGreenExpo.com.
This is Joe Battaglia. I've been ringing the warning bell about our economy for over a year now. We're in real trouble, and it's only going to get worse. We have a banking crisis and a government that's spending us into bankruptcy. So what are you going to do to protect yourself? Professional money managers are buying gold, real gold that you can hold in your hands. Why? Because when our paper dollars aren't worth anything, they'll own something that's been real wealth for the last 5,000 years. Since 2000, gold has outperformed equities 10 to 1. Many analysts say gold will rise above $1,000 this year. So you need to learn more about the benefits of owning gold. Call Goldline, one of the nation's oldest and largest dealers. They've been helping people to buy gold since 1960. And if you call now, 1-800-TAP-GOLD, T-A-P-G-O-L-D, they'll send you a free investor's kit telling you about the benefits of owning gold. It's free. Call 1-800-TAP-GOLD, T-A-P-G-O-L-D. Don't wait to call. 1-800-TAP-GOLD, T-A-P-G-O-L-D.
Free energy now.
We really want to change the world today.
Eagle Mountain, Utah.
We'll always take donations, that's for sure. Or some hard work volunteering. Give a little and you get back more. You know the future's looking brighter. We just want to help the world today.
Free energy now.
We really want to change the world today. We just want to help the world.
866-536-1100.
That's the toll-free number if you're listening live down there in the Phoenix area, 866-536-1100. We're talking this evening with Steve McNinch. He is with Growth Energy, America's ethanol producers. Steve, what is your website?
It's Western Plains Energy LLC.com is our my plant's website, but the Growth Energy website is, I believe, growthenergy.com or .org, I'm sorry.
Okay. I was mentioning after the last break this website. It's growthenergy.org is that website. This altfuelprices.com, I'm still down here in the Phoenix area looking at their map, and they show not just ethanol and CNG, which I mentioned earlier, but they show biodiesel, electric plug-in stations, hydrogen stations, LNG, LPG. There are like 25 LPG stations in the Phoenix metropolitan area. There's about a dozen or so electric plug-in stations. And you can do the same thing anywhere in the country. Just plug in your area in the where you're at, and it'll show you where the fill-in stations are. And you can zoom in, zoom out, or go out as you're mapping a trip across the country, see where you can fill up with stuff. Really cool resource. I have to just make one other plug here while we're talking about ethanol and clean fuels. And this guy that I was driving with, Ty Robinson, says basically that he thinks that the United States could only produce about 5% of its energy in the form of ethanol and be sustainable. I don't buy that because there are new technologies coming out that are making the production of ethanol more efficient. Plus, there are new farming technologies coming forward. One that, I'm not sure just how much I can mention about it. I am under NDA with the company. It's here in Salt Lake City. But I can mention that they're developing a technology that in 1 acre of an indoor building with controlled climate, powered by renewable energy, they can grow more food than on 230 acres of regular farmland. 1 acre versus 230 acres. They're using some amazing technologies to do that, and it's really great technology. And this is going to be coming out any time now. They're ready to rock and roll. They're just waiting for some funding for their first full production building to demonstrate this technology. But with that kind of compression of resources, you could grow your fuel just about anywhere. You don't have to have arable land because it's a aeroponic approach where rather than a hydroponic where you're submerging the root in water, they kind of miss the root. With they are able to get all the nutrients up into there. They have full spectrum fluorescent lighting that they can tune up and down to mimic sunrise, sunset. They can get several growing cycles per day. Really amazing technology. So, and all of this is super cheap. It's we're talking basically organic plus quality food, cheaper than what the cheap foods are available for. So, with these kinds of advancements, we really could become completely independent of fossil fuels.
I fully agree with that, and I don't want to argue with your friend's data, but we produce more than 5% of our fuel supply today out of ethanol. Currently, it's between 8 and 10% that is produced today, and we could go higher, but like I mentioned, laws and regulations prevent us from doing so. It's not because we can't, it's because we're not allowed to. As far as farming practices, it is absolutely incredible. I mean, you talk to even the seed companies of your traditional grown plants out there today. You know, last year, I believe, the average bushel an acre of corn was over 154 bushels per acre. You look around the world, and the world's lagging behind it like 50 bushels an acre. We need to teach them what we do. And those same people tell us that within 10 years, that same production will be 300 bushels to the acre.
And this is not taken away from food?
Absolutely not. It's adding to it. It's incredible. The one thing that people don't understand is farmers have always have and always will meet the needs that we need for food. They just have to have a market to supply it into. For so long, the corn growers in this country are probably as much responsible for the growth of the ethanol industry because there was no market for their corn. But they created one. And they created a great one.
Now, tell us about this organization, Growth Energy. This is not just, it's basically a group of individuals and companies, isn't it?
Absolutely. Last year, several of us in the ethanol industry, specifically the food versus fuel debate, we were really frustrated. We were the organizations that were out there, we didn't feel we're doing an adequate job of explaining the truth and the facts behind the matter. So several of us got together and formed Growth Energy. We kicked off last November. We've been very aggressively out trying to dispel some of these myths that are out there. I believe we're doing a good job. Last Friday, we actually petitioned the EPA to remove the E10 cap and move the acceptable level of ethanol blends for all vehicles to 15%.
And you feel like that'll have an impact?
We certainly hope so. By statute, the EPA has to make a ruling on any waiver request within 270 days. We believe we've provided them with the science and the studies that back up our claim. Again, we've talked with our auto manufacturers today. We've actually reached out and made contact with several scientists that spent decades in the automotive industry. And what we're finding out is the legacy vehicles out there today will have no impact whatsoever from E15. One of the most astonishing quotes that you'll listen to when you talk to these guys is, the big hurdle was from E0, which is no ethanol, to E10. After you get past that mix, it's just very, very minor. The systems that are out there today have been tested under conditions much harsher than E15. As a matter of fact, they use methanol at 15% to check a lot of the components, and methanol is a lot more aggressive and harsh alcohol than ethanol is.
What if I wanted to convert my vehicle to run on E85 or more? A little footnote here. One thing I learned from Ty is that the reason that E85, not E100%, is because then you could drink it. So they put a little bit of gasoline in there so people aren't going around drinking the fuel.
No, that's correct. I mean, all the ethanol that leaves our plant has at least 2% ethanol. 2% gasoline in it. We're heavily monitored by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms for that reason.
I'm realizing one of the sources that I mentioned earlier about that a lot of this misinformation has actually been spurred by and propagated by the oil industry. That was on David Bloom was on Coast to Coast on the 2nd of March of this year, 2009, talking to Ian Punnett. It was quite an interesting show. Actually, I think he was talking to George Norrie on Coast to Coast.
I mean, you can go back even farther than that. I watched a real interesting documentary on the History Channel. I can't remember what it was, but they were talking about during the Prohibition era, one of the backers was Rockefeller, Standard Oil, because at that time Henry Ford wanted to use ethanol to power the Model T, and that was a way for them to get ethanol out of the picture so we could stay with petroleum products. We've been battling the oil companies for a long time.
Mm-hmm. What if I wanted to convert my vehicle to run on E85 or above? What would I do, and how much would it cost?
There are several kits out there today. I'm not sure the websites that are involved with that. I know that one of the local implement dealers here was selling them, and the kit only cost $300 to install. And basically what it does, there's no change that you have to make to your vehicle. What it does is it monitors your computer. It's a computer that monitors your computer and adjusts the mix in the injection system to keep your fuel from becoming too lean.
So basically just tells the computer to not go buggy on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it does a little bit more than that. It makes sure that the air-to-fuel ratio is correct because you are burning the leaner fuel. Gasoline is a richer fuel than ethanol is.
All right. One more break, and then we'll have one more segment and wrap her up. But we'll get back to the subject when we come back from break.
I plugged the scan gauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The scan gauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The scan gauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at scangauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
When you screw up and he brings it to your attention, if you want him to love you, just go, "You're right.
Dr. Laura."
All your intent is to make his life worth living and worth living with you.
The Dr. Laura Program, middays at 1. Flu season is here. Don't let influenza knock you out. Act fast. Fight back.
I'm Dr. Susan Rehm with the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Vaccination remains the best way to fight influenza. But if you think you have the flu, see your doctor right away. Prescription antiviral medications can help you get better faster. And always remember to practice good hygiene.
Fight back against the flu. Learn more at nfid.org.
Arizona Together, Arizona's good news newspaper since 1991, was created to serve the community, providing information to help people enhance their lives in relationships, careers, finances, spirituality, and their own recovery. Arizona Together is solution-oriented and the resource for those interested in a better life today. To showcase your business and for subscription information, visit ArizonaTogether.com or call 480-767-7880. That's Arizona Together, 480-767-7880.
Get Wealthy Arizona every Wednesday from 3 to 4. Learn how to eliminate market risk from your retirement accounts by listening to Get Wealthy Arizona, brought to you by EquityForProfit.com, every Wednesday from 3 to 4 on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Free energy, now!
Sterling Allen coming back at you. I'm here in Eagle Mountain. We're talking tonight to Steve McNeek. He is over in Kansas and northwest Kansas. Tell us about Western Plains Energy, this other company, your CEO of Western Plains Energy, which is part of Growth Energy, I guess a member organization?
That's correct. Western Plains Energy is an ethanol company that was, we started production in January of 2004. Our nameplate or intended capacity is 40 million gallons a year. We actually produce closer to 50 million gallons a year. As I mentioned earlier, our primary feedstock isn't corn. It's actually grain sorghum or milo. We've been very, very successful. A lot of people talk about ethanol companies can't be successful on their own. I'd ask any of those that don't think so to come visit our plant. We've been extremely successful at a time when we're all watching our 401k shrink every day when we watch the Dow. We've actually distributed to our shareholders a 14% annual return in the last 4 months.
Well, yeah, that's good news in a bad economy.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I'm noticing as I looked on the growthenergy.org website during the break, there's this little thing about when will Big Food lower prices? Now that commodity prices are back down and Big Food is raking in the cash, when will they cut their prices? Maybe you can talk about that for a second.
Absolutely. Again, it goes back to the food versus fuel debate. You know, we've had the grocery manufacturers be very vocal for over a year now that ethanol was driving up the cost of food. Back in November, there's actually a clock there. I haven't looked at it for a few days, but it's been running for quite some time. I mean, for example, Tyson Foods in the fourth quarter last year reported their largest profit ever at a time when commodity prices had come down over 50%. So, you know, our stance is if you're going to say that we drove up the price of food, now the food prices at the raw material level are back down, why is it that when I go to the grocery store, my food costs aren't coming down? Actually, in a lot of cases, they continue to go up.
One of the big, perceptions of ethanol, this is one that I had early on and have had for over, many years, is that the amount of energy that it takes to grow ethanol, grow the crop, harvest it and to turn it into ethanol, that it actually can take more energy than what you get from burning ethanol.
20 years ago, Sterling, that would have been absolutely correct. Today, it's very far from the truth. Actually, you get probably two-thirds more energy out in raw BTUs than we consume through the growing process and the production of ethanol. And that goes directly back to what we talked about before. Technology advances today are immediate and very, very rapid. Like I mentioned, the plant I operate started production in January of 2004. This is our five-year anniversary. It's considered an old ethanol plant today, and it's only 5 years old. In the last 3 years, for example, on a per-gallon basis, 3 years ago, we would consume at the plant level about 30,000 BTUs of energy to produce a gallon of ethanol. But today, that number is 15,000 BTUs, so we've cut that number in half. A lot of these studies that you see that are continually reiterated in the press are, in some cases, decades old. Plants don't look like they look like 20 years ago today.
One of the things that has an advantage in this Synergy Farm that I was telling you about, the 1 acre that produces as much food as 230 acres of regular farm, because it's an indoor situation, also the amount of water that they consume is so small that they can actually pull it out of the air through condensation. They don't even have to have an influx of water from a stream or anything like that. so efficient.
That's very nice. But being in the arid climate that we're in, that would be something to pull off out here.
Yeah. So there are a lot of great technologies. Now, what about these? There's a lot of ways of improving the method by which you can convert plant matter, not just like corn, for example, which is a fruit. When I say fruit, I'm talking in the generic term of the stuff you eat that comes from the plant. But, you know, even like even the stalk of a tree, for example, converting that into usable fuel. They're talking about the different kinds of bacteria, different methods by which you can convert one to the other. Which of the methodologies has you most excited? And is that something that you at Western Plains Energy are involved in, kind of bird-dogging the best technologies available?
The unique thing about the ethanol industry is that most of us are very, very small, so I don't have an engineering staff, but we are also, we're such a young industry, we continue to share information, and we're continually reaching out amongst ourselves and talking about new technologies that are out there. The amazing thing about our industry is, you know, people talk about looking outside the box. We're young enough still that we don't have a box to look outside of. In Colorado, I hear people talking about, you know, we see the damage done by the pine beetle, and people are actually looking at harvesting those trees and using those to make ethanol out of. The neat thing to me about cellulosic ethanol is there's not one biomass that we will be choosing from. It will be literally whatever biomass is readily available in your area. You know, in the southeast where you have forests, that could be wood chips. In the corn belt, it may be corn stover or corn cobs. It's, once we tackle that hurdle, Mother Nature has that wonderful way of making it difficult for us to understand, but once we figure out how to get to that cellulosic breakdown secret, really there is no limit on how much ethanol we can produce at that point.
How many companies are involved in growth energy?
Currently today there are 51 ethanol companies as members. The last count I knew of, there were 166 ethanol plants or companies around the country. It's a little over a third. Again, that's pretty good considering we've only been in existence for 4 months.
Is there another similar organization that is larger?
RFA, I believe, is about the same size, maybe a little bit bigger, the Renewable Fuels Association. There's also another organization out there called ACE, American Coalition for Ethanol. They're a little bit smaller. And we continue to work together on issues, whether they be innovation, technical advances, political efforts. So through the three, almost all of us, ethanol plants in the country are represented by one of the three, if not a combination thereof.
Do you have a lobby component over in Washington?
Yes, we do. We've recently reached out, and General Wesley Clark, former presidential candidate and former Allied commander in Kosovo, is our co-chairman. Tom Bias, former president of the National Farmers Union, is our CEO. He'll be coming on board on the 15th. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich was very instrumental in helping us build our framework. So we're kind of trying to remain neutral, very much a bipartisan organization. And it's very, very interesting as we tell our national leaders our story, how quickly they see the light, so to speak, and really start singing our praises.
Energy, of course, is an international issue, and the issues we face here are not unique to us. Do you have much international outreach as an organization?
Not yet, but we absolutely want to. One of the things we want to make sure that Growth Energy becomes known for is reaching out around the world. It would be a great thing to send tractors overseas instead of missiles. Teach these other countries how to have sustainable agriculture and utilize that to produce energy. We think the limitations are non-existent. All we have to do is teach the world.
What would you say is a major drawback that you're trying to overcome with alcohol fuels?
Battling the status quo, I believe, currently is. You know, like we talked about before, when gasoline was $4 a gallon, nobody wanted to go to the gas station to fill up. We wanted to find a new way. now that gasoline prices have come back down, it's like, how quickly do we forget? You know, I don't think people really understand the danger involved with that. I mean, when you're supplying foreign countries and a lot of them that don't really like us with over $400 billion annually, that's a very, very scary thing.
There's a number on your website that says 130,101 jobs could be created in the United States just by changing the ethanol from 10% to 15%.
Absolutely. There was a study released last week by North Dakota State University. And, you know, at a time when we're arguing about our government spending our tax dollars for stimulus packages, this one's free. All it is change that arbitrary number from 10%, look at the science that's out there, move to 15%. The ethanol industry has continued to grow, even with the cap out there, but we've reached the breaking point. We just can't build any farther without that cap being removed.
Now, I have come across several stories in the last few months with the downturn of the economy of various, I thought it was ethanol companies that were going out of business. What's that about?
It's really no, I mean, you touched on it in your comment, in the downturn of the economy. The ethanol industry is not immune from the economics of the economy in general. A lot of businesses, whether they be ethanol companies or whatever, took advantage of money being very, very cheap, lending practices being very lax. A lot of these companies were built with a huge amount of debt, very little equity. When the economy turned, it became impossible to service those debts. So, yes, there are ethanol companies that have suffered through these tough economic times, but look at General Motors, for example. I mean, there's a industry stalwart for the American manufacturing industry, and they're virtually bankrupt today as well.
Got a couple minutes left here. Give us kind of a wrap-up statement.
The wrap-up statement that I like to tell people is, you know, we tried ethanol in the early 80s. There was a huge outcry from the oil embargo in the 70s. The American farmer and the American ethanol producer attempted to step up to the plate 20 years ago. Early in the 2000s, that cry was made again. You have seen the American farmer and the American ethanol industry take up the challenge once again. I guess the question that I have from an ethanol producer standpoint is, are we truly serious this time? We have continued to double the size of this industry time and time again. And just, we have legislation out there that says we need to go there. We're ready to go there. We're just, all we're asking is, allow us to go there.
Well, thank you, Steve. We've been talking to Steve McNeese from Growth Energy. He's also with Western Plains Energy, LLC. Thanks for joining us.
Certainly, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at pesweeki.com. That's PESWIKI.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems.